Hey, everybody. This is Chuck, and welcome to, I guess this is week three of SYSK Selects, where we give you one of our favorite or maybe a timely episode from our vault that maybe you didn't hear. And we're curating these individually, and this is my pick, Lying Liars, colon, How Lying Works, Liar. I think that was, sounds like a Josh title. It's a great one. And this is from June of 2012, and I don't know, I just remember this being a pretty good episode. And lying is just a pretty interesting concept to me, and so I wanted to make this my selection this week, and I hope you enjoy it.
Welcome to Stuff You Should Know from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hey, and welcome to the podcast. I'm Josh Clark. There's Charles W. Chuck Bryant. Right?
Yeah.
Take it, Chuck.
Josh, that shirt looks great on you today. I just want to say that I really like a checked pattern.
Well, I see what you're doing. You're blinking and you're scratching your face. You look like you have scabies, like my friend Dirty Mitch.
Yeah.
But that doesn't indicate necessarily that you're lying.
Yes, I'm glad you said necessarily, because they didn't say that in this article, and that was a very important omission.
No, they did.
They didn't say necessarily.
They, meaning Tom.
Tom didn't say necessarily. I had to write it in. Because what we're talking about are potential tells whether or not you can recognize a lie. And people often associate blinking, scratching the face, covering the mouth.
Sure.
As surefire indicators, and that's not necessarily the case, is it?
No, it's not. And let's just get that out right now.
Yeah.
Because there aren't any surefire behaviors where you're like, oh, you're lying. Like the one I always heard was touching your face.
Yeah.
Right? It's based on the idea that somebody might do that.
Sure.
If they don't normally do that.
Right.
Or if before this whole conversation started, mm-hmm. and a lie, they're placed in a position where they're lying,
yeah.
where they're choosing to lie. And they start doing that, they are now deviating from their baseline behavior.
And that's what the important thing is.
Exactly. That's where you add the qualifier necessarily.
Like Tom said.
Yeah.
Like maybe the dude has an eyelash in his eye. That's
yeah.
the reason he's rubbing his eyes.
Right.
Or blinking a lot. So, yeah, it's interesting. We
or
just
maybe
gave
he
away
has
something.
Rosacea.
Yeah.
That's why he's scratching his face.
True.
Or scabies.
Or maybe someone's self-conscious because of a missing front tooth. So they cover their mouth when they talk.
I cover my mouth when I talk, especially when I'm eating.
Oh, yeah, sure.
But you're just not supposed to talk while you eat.
Yeah, Emily does that because she can't stop talking ever. So she'll just talk while she eats and cover her mouth.
So I'm not even going to bother to ask you if you've ever lied.
I've lied today.
Have you?
Sure. So have you.
I'm sure. Apparently, according to studies, mm-hmm. I have. You found a few studies that I thought were a little... Let's get into them.
Okay.
I mean, so they're surprising. Like one of them found that a quarter of all of our daily interactions involve lies.
That seemed a little high.
That's really high.
Yeah.
I don't think like I'm naive. I went back and just kind of like evaluated my behavior. I'm like, still seems high.
Yeah. Agreed.
So, is everyone else lying more than us? Are these just a really rotten people?
I don't know.
That happened to be part of this random sample in the study?
Well, and you know, you pull up any study on lying and you're going to find a different result. Like, people lie every 90 minutes. People lie every 90 seconds.
Yeah.
They lie twice a day.
Right.
That kind of thing.
Yeah. So,
it's a little hinky.
Field of psychology is failing miserably at studying lying, is what you're saying.
Nah. As far as coming up with hard, because I don't think there are any hard and fast rules. I might not lie at all today. Or I might lie 10 times tomorrow.
If you don't lie at all today, they'll make a movie about you.
Yeah, you're right.
Don't they make movies like that?
Oh, sure. You either can't lie.
Right.
Jim Carrey's case.
Yeah.
Or, yeah, that's usually the plot.
Yeah. So, I guess before we get into the studies, do you want to talk about what is a lie?
Yeah, you dug this up. I like these definitions.
So there's this philosopher named Cecilia Bach, who is a Swedish philosopher who published a book in 1978 that apparently still to this day is like the authority on lying and philosophically speaking.
They did good work in the 70s in psychology, I think.
They were smoking a lot of weed.
Yeah, is that what it was?
Yeah, and she's a philosopher. So this is the philosophical, ethical approach to lying. And so Cecilia Bach came up with basically a definition of a lie. And she said that it has three features. That it communicates some information.
Okay.
Now, philosophers tend to choose their words carefully.
Yeah.
They're like almost the poets of the humanities.
Agreed.
Especially if you don't include poetry as a humanity.
Yeah.
The liar intends to deceive or mislead.
Of course.
And the liar believes that what they're saying is not true.
So they haven't tricked themselves into believing that they, like OJ, believes that he did not kill his wife.
Yeah. I don't know. I think that's a different conversation altogether,
okay,
because that begs the question, is it really possible to fully trick yourself into believing something you know is not true is true?
You always hear that that can happen. Like, you become so entrenched in that lie for so long that you don't even realize it's a lie anymore. I'd like to see the study on that, though.
Yeah. I'm sure somebody's got one out there.
Yeah.
But so those three, you put those three things together and you have a lie. You're communicating information, right?
Yeah.
You intend to deceive and you don't believe what you're saying
right.
is true.
And all apologies to OJ, by the way. That was really uncalled for.
Yeah, really.
Sorry.
That was very uncalled for, Chuck. Shame on you for...
All right, go ahead.
There's a big debate, though, about whether or not... the lie has to have false information to it.
Yeah, that's what I don't quite understand. Can you explain that?
Yeah, so example. I like your shirt, and I know that you hate shirts that have armpit stains on them.
Right.
But I know at the present time, mm-hmm, you also have a pinched nerve in your neck, so you can't see very clearly.
Okay.
So I want your shirt. I know you'll give it to me if I tell you there's an armpit stain. I don't think there's an armpit stain. I don't believe what I'm saying is true. But I say, Chuck, that Modest Mouse shirt has an armpit stain. You should probably give it to me. And you take it off and give it to me, and the shirt actually has an armpit stain, and someone pops their head in and goes, wah, wah, wah. That was not false information.
I get you.
Even though I intended to deceive you, I didn't believe what I was saying.
Sure.
I was just communicating information. That's the point.
Okay.
But that brings up another philosophical question, like, is a lie of omission then a lie? Because you're not communicating anything.
Well, and that's
in
Tom's article, they talk about the reason the U.S. court system say the whole truth and nothing but the truth is because a lie of omission sometimes is not as... look down upon, because you're not actually constructing some falsehood.
Right.
You're just not telling the whole truth.
Right.
Interesting.
Yeah.
A
lot of it's
version
very
of a
subjective.
Lie. Yeah.
You know?
Sure.
I think ultimately you can follow the conclusion is that most philosophers believe that lying is bad.
Oh, yeah.
But that there are exceptions to the rule. Like, if a murderer comes up and says, hey, I'm looking for my next victim. Have you seen this man? And you have seen this man? And you know where he is?
Yeah.
Then I'm making this really basic here.
Yeah, that's as elementary as it gets.
But that's an example of when a lie is beneficial. You're thwarting a murderer and saving somebody's life. Yes, you should lie.
Sure. Or obviously a white lie, which kids learn early on, is something you do oftentimes to spare the feelings of someone else.
Right.
That top does not make you look fat. I think it's cut just fine.
Sure.
But maybe you should wear that other one because you look great in black.
Well, I imagine if you're dealing with an intelligent person, you've shown your hand at that point.
Oh, not necessarily.
Yeah. But you did mention kids. You mentioned white lies.
Yeah.
So you found a study. Supposedly, according to Tom, around age 2 or 3, we realize that we're not being constantly supervised.
Yeah,
that reality exists outside of other people's view. Our reality sometimes does when we go into another room. Or,
sure. Mom's in the other room. I'm still
exactly.
in here playing.
Yes. And it becomes clear to us that we are responsible for conveying that information, but we have a choice, e.g. free will, that allows us to decide whether that we convey that information truthfully or dishonestly.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
And then after that, it just takes off like a rocket.
Yeah, this one study found that 9 in 10 of the kids that they spied on, and this is just cruel. They put kids in a room
right.
with like a stuffed animal, or they called it a soft toy, which was a little creepy, behind them and said, "Don't look at that behind you." And they would leave the room and videotape them. And of course, 9 out of 10 kids turned around and looked at it. And then, did it actually say how many of them lied? I don't even see that. I guess they were just told not to look at it.
You know? I don't know if that's a lie.
Yeah, that's a little hinky.
It's not following orders. It's disobeying.
All right, well, how about this? The second part of that study was older kids. They would give them a test with the answers on the back and tell them not to look at the answers.
Right.
Give them a fake answer, and when they were asked to explain the fake answer, they would make up a lie like, oh, I learned that in history class.
Right, and actually the question was who discovered Tunisia. That's one of them. And on the back, the answer was a fake answer, Presidius Aikman. And so the dumb kids
from Star Wars
who cheated said, it does, doesn't it?
Yeah.
The dumb kids who cheated put that down. And, but then when given the opportunity to fess up, most of them lied.
Right.
What I disagree with about this study was that, it said that the smartest kids told the best lies. How do you qualify the best lies?
If it's believable and conveyed in a way that's,
but that's all subjective.
With confidence.
That's
sure.
Totally subjective.
Yeah, you're right.
It's methodologically unsound.
But the whole point of these studies was they believe that children who are able to lie,
mm-hmm.
Have faster developing brains, especially the areas involved in executive functioning. So
right.
They believe, they concur, that a child who lies early on might be more successful later in life.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you could make a case that lying is basically using your imagination.
Yeah.
Especially when you're a child.
And they have other studies that support the fact that rich people are more prone to lie and manipulate. So,
Rich people are more prone to do a lot of shady stuff.
You think?
Well, yeah.
Yeah. That's how a lot of them get rich.
Huh.
Yeah.
Hmm. Chuck.
Yes.
You want to talk about why people tell lies, like some of the great categories of lies?
The big six?
Is that what you call it?
Sure.
Okay.
Number one, Josh, is to conceal a misdeed and stay out of trouble. And even at the advanced age of 41, this is the reason I will most often lie.
Oh, okay.
Because I hate being in trouble. And I will try and cover for myself sometimes. Even though, in the end and in the long run, it's better to tell the truth.
Agreed.
The short term, you might get away with something, but you're not doing yourself any favors.
No. I call these lies of cowardice.
Thank you.
It's basically, it sucks. I mean, it sucks
yeah.
that you're having to like go through this terrible, uncomfortable, you know, moment or whatever it is. But I'm really glad Tom pointed out, at least in the short term, you might not gain an advantage. But overall, like, there is a positive outcome. You're building trust.
Sure.
By fessing up or whatever, you know.
Number two, to preserve a reputation. And the example Tom used is a drug addict. Recovering drug addict who might lie about having gone to rehab or something like that.
Right. Or to like a prospective romantic partner.
Yeah.
And I think that these are kind of understandable to an extent. It's like, you know, we have walls up.
Yeah.
You know, if you're just a normal person, you don't walk down the street like, hey, Josh, good to meet you. I spent some time in rehab.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, there's just a certain amount. And then once you get to that point, well, then maybe you are kind of short shrifting somebody who you consider close to.
Yeah.
If you're not telling them that.
But as you gain trust, then you open up more and
right.
are
you
more
should.
Truthful. Sure. Number three, this one, of course, we all get the white lie to avoid hurting someone's feelings.
Yeah.
We already kind of covered that.
Mm-hmm.
Number four, to increase stature or reputation.
Yeah. These are Weasley.
Yeah, these are just the boastful people. They're like, yeah, I scored 42 in a high school basketball game one time. And
man.
I won county and track. And you're like, you do some investigation and you realize they weren't even on the track team.
Right. And I've realized that, like, when you have a lot of these people in your life, like,
yeah.
It's time to get introspective because there's something wrong with the way that you're living if you have people like this
yeah.
orbiting you
yeah.
a lot.
Those people wear me out.
They really do. I've done a pretty good job of shaking, you know, everybody like that off. I can't think of anybody in my life, like even acquaintance wise.
Yeah,
me too. Like, that just makes up lies about themselves.
Agreed. And I have known people like that.
Sure.
They don't stick around.
No, especially once you get out of what you're like mid twenties is like the edge.
Yeah.
Of what, you know, where you should be interacting with those people still.
Well, and I think that's sort of an immaturity thing too. Like
right.
If you're still doing that as you grow older, then you've got some serious problems. But everyone, when they're younger, probably stretches the truth about things they've done.
Sure, but even still, don't you remember, like, it just kind of being uncomfortable when somebody was doing this, and everyone in this group that they're talking to is like, we know you're lying.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, please stop. You might as well be putting bamboo shoots under our fingernails.
Number five, to manipulate, and this is probably something, like I said, the rich people are more prone to lie. This isn't evasive or defensive. It's to gain something for yourself.
Yeah, it's pretty, it's the most vicious type of lying.
Probably so.
Because it also can involve telling lies about other people.
Right, to get ahead.
Right.
That's awful.
To destroy someone else's reputation.
Yeah. Man, those people, there's a special place in Dante's circle for you.
Agreed. Now, those people you start to run into more of, especially as you enter like, the corporate world.
And you know what? They may be the same people who were telling the other lies when they were younger. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
They just evolved into be manipulators.
Yeah.
And the last one, Josh, is to control information. And this is what we mentioned about indirect lying or like withholding parts of the truth.
Right. A lie of omission.
Yeah. Which I'm more able to forgive something like that.
Okay. So that's, as you called it, the big six, huh?
The big six.
Chuck, kind of one of the running themes that we've had here is that everybody lies. I don't think that we've... you said it explicitly.
Everyone lies?
Yeah.
I bet the Dalai Lama doesn't lie.
I don't know. I could see him wanting to preserve harmony or balance or something like that at a diplomatic dinner or something.
Right.
With one of his followers' feelings about, like, yes, that is a really nice sand mandala.
Sure.
You know?
Yeah, he's put in a lot of high-pressure social situations.
Sure. So... at the very least, everyone has little white lies, I imagine, like, right?
Yeah, sure.
But there are some types of personalities that are much more prone to lying.
The big five.
Yes. Like pathological liars.
Yes, they are the worst of the worst because they are sociopathic and they don't understand right and wrong. And they're probably really good liars because they don't understand right or wrong because they're not going to have the stresses associated with guilt and lying.
Yeah.
Bad people.
Yeah, their consciences don't put them through their paces when they're lying because they lack in whole or in part consciences compared to non-sociopathic people.
Right. Number two, I've known one of these people, a compulsive liar, and I really felt bad for him because they almost seem like they can't help it.
Yeah, and you would think a pathological liar and a compulsive liar are one and the same.
Not true.
No, a compulsive liar, a pathological liar lies as a strategy. It's a means of gaining advantage. A compulsive liar, like, can't help it. Like, they have their brain has been trained to lie.
Yeah.
As a first resort.
Mm-hmm.
Even if they're not, if there's no gain whatsoever in lying, they will still just generally lie. It's their first thing. It's their gut reaction.
It's this guy I knew, it was really clear that he lied as a first option, as his go-to, when he didn't need to. And it was so frustrating.
Sure.
And I had a sort of a big brotherly relationship to this guy. So he wasn't a peer. So I tried to help him through that. But I haven't talked to him in a long time. I don't know if it worked.
So you abandoned him?
I abandoned him. And this of course makes sense in his case too, without getting specific, but it said that living in an abusive environment where lying is necessary to self-preservation might be where that stems from.
Yeah.
And I think that was the case for him.
So yeah, it's like the brain has been trained to lie. Like, this is what you do.
Yeah.
But the good thing is if you run across somebody in your life who cares enough about you, they can be trained out of you, I imagine.
Yeah.
Although I'm sure it's a painful process for both people.
Yeah, it's probably
well, you were really waiting for me to say people.
Cult deprogramming.
Yeah.
Narcissist, of course, will lie.
These are the people who lie to increase stature and reputation.
Yeah.
But they do themselves no favors.
No.
Borderline personalities. I thought this one was kind of interesting. They will go through wild mood swings and engage in really risky behavior.
Mm-hmm.
But then they come back down to normalcy and they're like, oh, I just gambled away our savings
right.
account. And then they'll lie to cover those up.
Right. And then histrionic personalities. These are people, if you have like a true histrionic personality disorder, you are attention seeking, excessively needy for approval. And emotional.
Yeah.
Apparently women are more prone to be histrionic by a ratio of 4 to 1.
Oh, is that right?
That's what they say. Or at least to have the disorder. And you can, these are people desperate for attention. Like, if you walk out the door, I'm going to kill myself. That was a great example Tom used.
Yeah.
That's a lie.
You and I were on this AirTran flight once and this, we were waiting to take off and this caterer was backing off of the little on his little sky ramp. He was backing away from the other door, the catering door.
Yeah.
And apparently he was still hooked to part of it or whatever. And the steward was like, no, no, don't. And he kept going. And she turned around and was like, well, we're not going anywhere for a while. And the way she said it, you could tell we were discussing this. Like, neither one of us believed her. We just knew she was wrong.
Yeah.
Because she just threw it out there, like, well, we're not going anywhere for a while. Like, and of course, like, everything was fine within like 15 minutes.
Right.
But the way she sounded, it was going to be like stuck on a tarmac for 3 hours. And it was weird. We were afforded this glimpse into this woman's true personality.
Yeah, yeah.
And I wouldn't have hung out with her.
It's histrionics.
She was a bit histrionic.
Yeah.
And that was probably low level, you could tell.
Right.
Yeah.
All right. So stay away from her. How can you tell if someone's lying? We've talked about micro-expressions.
Yeah, we have.
In
the micro-expressions,
micro-expressions podcast.
Episode, yeah.
That was like 3 years ago.
Yeah. Yeah, it has been. Well, basically, for those people who don't know that we have a good 130, 150 episodes still.
Not on iTunes?
Not on iTunes.
Yeah.
The episode we did on micro-expressions. Basically, a micro-expression is an uncontrollable, fleeting, like millisecond-long
mm-hmm.
facial expression that is linked to your true feelings. That
right.
was longer than a millisecond.
I just made a quick frowny face.
That was a grimace.
Yeah, was it?
You looked like Megan Amram.
I don't know who that is.
She's on Twitter going like this. It's hilarious. You can't control it. It's linked to your true feelings.
Mm-hmm.
And people have been shown to be able to pick up on these without even consciously knowing it.
Right.
You just get what we would call a gut feeling about somebody.
Right.
Because their smile and that sudden fleeting micro expression of like contempt back into a smile
mm-hmm.
that you didn't really see but you caught don't add up.
Gotcha.
And your body's like, why am I having a weird reaction to this person? So that's a micro expression, and they're apparently linked to lies. And lying. So basically, if you have a gut feeling that somebody's lying,
you might be onto something.
Yes, and it might be because of a micro expression that you saw.
Interesting.
You know this.
I know, but I still find it interesting.
Okay.
I'm not lying.
That's your new thing, interesting. Did you know that?
That I said that?
Uh-huh.
I've been on that for a while.
Yeah.
Have I ramped it up lately?
Mm-hmm.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
These are nonverbal cues, by the way, micro expressions. Another one is a forced smile, and I think we've talked about this too. That's when you smile with your mouth only.
Yeah, that's so creepy.
It is.
The seeing it, you're just like, you know, what are you doing? Like,
right.
You look weird right now. But seeing it described the way Tom wrote it, which is a perfect description, was creepy to me.
Yes, it was. Another thing you can look for is like someone's nodding yes during a denial. Some kind that could be a dead giveaway.
That's terrible.
Sometimes it's like way more outward, like you get literally in a defensive position.
Right.
Like crossing your arms or
moving
like
away.
Turning away from somebody.
Yeah.
Who's questioning you.
And fidgeting. Finally we get to fidgeting. Like fidgeting is significant if the person is normally calm.
Right.
Or doesn't normally fidget. If
right.
it's a fidgety, nervous person to begin with, then that doesn't mean that they're lying.
Sure.
If they're fidgety and then they get calm all of a sudden while you think that they're lying, then you're on to something there. But they're probably the weirdest person in the world, and you should force them into lies just to watch them go from fidgety to normal. Because that'd be really odd to see.
Verbal, sometimes, you know, you can pick up on nonverbal cues. Sometimes they are quite verbal. Ask me a question. Ask me, why didn't I come over last night and help you with your lawn mowing?
That's a terrible question.
All right, well, ask me something else then.
Why did you tell me that the Sweetwater thing doesn't have a date when it clearly does?
Well, I'll fake it, and then I'll tell you the real answer.
Okay. Because
that actually does have a real answer. So what? You're saying that you looked and saw that my band gig for Sweetwater didn't have a date on it? Is that what you're asking me?
Yes.
Well, I mean, I could tell you right now exactly. There's a very good reason for that, Josh.
Then why don't you, liar?
So those are some of the actually verbal cues. Taking too long, not using contractions, repeating the question, mm-hmm. basically buying yourself some time.
Not using contractions is hilarious to me. Like, I cannot believe that you want to know
right.
why I didn't tell you,
yeah.
why I did not tell you this.
Yeah.
And the reason why?
The real reason why?
No, the reason why you're not using contractions.
Well, to draw it out.
So your brain can, the other part of your brain can come up with the answer. That's so hilarious.
The real reason why I said that about Sweetwater is because I just found out 2 days ago that they have gone with another band, and
no
it is
way.
Officially canceled.
No.
Yeah. I was a little bummed.
Do you want me to talk to somebody?
No.
Oh, wow.
Now, I was told that one of the reasons why they went with another band is because we didn't have, like, video and things to send to show.
I thought you clogged up your 250 gig computer with HD videos.
Yeah, but a lot of the stuff we don't want to send out.
Oh.
So anyway.
Is it like a lot of pantsless?
Yeah.
Pantsless El Cheapo videos?
Yeah, pantsless.
Well,
gigs.
I think that stinks. If you're at Sweetwater Brewery right now, shame on you.
No, this isn't them. This is an NGO. This is a fundraiser.
So the fan who wrote in to ask you.
Yes.
Bumped you?
Bumped me.
Really?
For another band, and I'd looked at the other band too. Like, they have a website and videos and.
Okay. Lady? Stop listening right now.
No, don't do that.
At least for the rest of the episode.
It's okay. It was humbling.
Well, I'm sorry that I brought it up, Chuck.
That's okay. Might as well get it out there. I'm glad you did, because you probably thought I was lying to you.
I did.
All right.
Where are we?
We are now going to teach people how to lie, which I thought was an interesting feature of this article.
Okay. I thought it was interesting. I also refuse to do it. I find it wholly amoral to teach people how to lie.
Do you want to skip this then?
No, but it's still information. I feel like we can say people who are successful at lying mm-hmm. tend to do certain things, but teaching somebody how to lie, mm-hmm. I think is just utterly wrong.
Well, I imagine there's been more than one attorney give these instructions to their clients.
Definitely.
On the stand.
But I mean, who likes attorneys? Nobody.
Well, we're making all kinds of friends today.
Yeah. Attorneys in Detroit, especially. P.U.
All right. So here's how to lie. So says Tom Sheaf.
No. This is what successful liars do.
Okay. Stay calm. That's what they'll probably tell you before you get on the witness stand. They'll coach you up.
Especially with the polygraph.
Yeah, sure. Because it measures all those fluctuations in what? Temperature and heart rate and.
Yeah, those two things.
Yeah, just those two things. Keep it simple, stupid. And this one, boy, you see this one. When someone's cooking up a lie, and they're lying when they start adding all these details, because they think, well, the more detailed, like, who could make this up?
I was thinking about this, and I was like, while I was reading this, I was like going over my own behavior, using myself as a model.
Me
it's
too.
Impossible not to, I guess, right?
Agreed.
This I did not get. Like, I tried to think back to, like, any lie or story I've ever told, and, like, just adding details and, like, information that has nothing to do with anything, like, I don't get that.
Yeah. Well, you know, it probably means you're not a very good liar. That's a good thing.
I hope that's what it means.
But that's like the Eddie Murphy, remember his joke about, you know, the lady caught the guy, like, the car was at the other lady's house, and it was just wasn't me. That's what he kept saying. Yeah, but I caught you red-handed. Wasn't me.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, and that, I guess that kind of goes back to it. Keep it as simple as possible.
Richard Pryor apparently also had a little bit where, like, he said that he came in and found, like, his wife or his girlfriend in bed with another guy, and she's like, who are you going to believe, me or your lion eyes?
That's pretty good.
Yeah.
Remain steady. And this goes back to the, you're being studied by, let's go ahead and use the courtroom example. Like, we're coaching you to go on the stand. This jury's going to be watching you. Just remain steady. If you're all fidgety, stay fidgety.
People who are good liars tend to remain steady.
Right.
And what we mean by that is not just like you have to keep a steady hand.
Mm-hmm.
That was already covered in staying calm. People who are good liars continue the behavior that they were, if they were relaxed before this, a line of questioning started, they're
right.
relaxed during it and they're relaxed after.
Right.
If they're fidgety, then they're fidgety before, during, and after.
Yeah, because they say one of the telltale signs is, or the way, one way to trip up a liar, which we'll talk about, is to change the subject.
Right.
And see if you see them relax.
Right.
Because they think, oh man, that's over. Thank God.
Yeah. Yeah. Tom says, once the questioning is over, don't suddenly relax and appear relieved.
Yeah. All right, so I can get down now.
Exactly.
Off the stand. And then good liars generally are affable, which makes sense.
Yeah.
They make people want to believe them.
Yeah. Because I think if you don't like somebody, it's easier to be suspicious of them.
Yeah.
You know, how many people have gotten away with horrible stuff because they just seemed likable?
Yeah.
What about Ted Bundy? How many people,
sure.
how many more people was he able to kill?
Yeah.
And he got caught. Remember, we talked about him before.
Oh, yeah.
He got caught because he went on, like, just a completely reckless, like, killing rampage in a sorority house.
Yeah, he killed for years before that.
Yeah, but he was, white, and he had a good haircut. So,
yeah,
I mean, he couldn't have been any threat to anybody.
Right.
You know?
I love that serial killer stuff. I could do, like, every other show on some aspect of that.
We'll do another serial killer one.
Okay.
Okay, so Chuck.
Yeah.
I don't find it amoral to teach people to tell when someone is lying.
Right.
So that we can do.
Five steps.
The big five.
The big five.
Part two.
Part two. And we kind of already talked about establishing the baseline. Like, if you think someone might be lying and you're quizzing them, look at their behavior very closely and determine how they just normally act, and just go ahead and log that in your brain. That's step one.
Right. And I mean, this is like, I guess if this is if you're a professional interrogator.
Yeah.
Like the lady in that terrible show,
mm-hmm.
Or on Law and Order, the great shows.
Or if you're on a jury, this is good advice. If you sit on a jury to watch these people.
That's a good one too, for yeah. sure. Or if you are, something, if you are really hell-bent on finding out if somebody that you interact with is lying to you.
Yeah.
And you do a lot of pre-planning. You could do this too. But yes, before you let on that there's a line of questioning that's going to be coming up, you want to interact with the person and make notes about their behavior.
Yeah.
Are they a fidgety Joe?
Not literally in front of them making notes.
Right.
Because that'll give you away.
Or if you do that, just don't let them see what you're writing.
Exactly. All right. So number two is once you've established this, to look for deviations from that. Pretty much a no-brainer.
Yeah.
Like, do they start fidgeting, all that stuff?
Yeah. Or if they're a fidgety Joe, do they turn into a smooth Samuel all of a sudden? That's weird. That would just be so weird.
It would be.
It's weirder if they're a smooth Samuel and they turn into a fidgety Joe. There you go. That's a deviation from the baseline.
That's right. Step three, you really got to listen. Somebody might be pretty steely with their nonverbal cues.
Yeah.
So just listen to what they're saying and... is it adding up? If they're spouting off all kinds of details,
yeah.
maybe lead them down a different path and then jump back to those details and
right.
see if they're still on those.
And then you pick out a detail that seems a little hinky to you, as you would say,
mm-hmm.
and start asking them questions about that. Because
right.
then they may have to lie about the lie.
Right.
And if none of it's fitting, are they having to make up more information to explain why certain things aren't fitting into this?
Mm-hmm.
And eventually, if you draw the line of questioning out enough, you're going to drive the person totally insane.
Right.
Because their brains are going overtime.
Yeah, the telltale heart, I think, isn't that what happened in that?
Mm-hmm.
They
well,
eventually
his guilt finally got to him. They
yeah.
didn't even know what was going on, those guys.
Oh, yeah, that's right. They were sort of innocently questioning, yeah. And it was all in his head.
Either that or it was really a phantom heart.
Right.
That's the, I guess, you just shouldn't murder.
Yeah, boy, that John Cusack movie about Poe looks like one of the worst pieces of garbage ever made.
It really does.
Whose idea was that? Let's make a movie about Edgar Allan Poe as a murderous hunter. And I'm thinking John Cusack.
Yeah, really. Although I have to say Abe Lincoln Vampire Hunter looks awesome.
Oh, yeah. I totally want to see that.
Man, I can't wait to see that.
John Cusack's not in that, though, is he?
No, but oh, okay. I'm sorry. I saw the preview for the Poe one and uh-huh. for the Abraham Lincoln one, like right next to each other. So
gotcha.
I link the two, and they look similar in
sure.
mood or tone. Hold on. With everything adding up and
yeah.
drawing it out.
Yeah.
One of the other things we talked about, the body language, where a body language might belie what they're really thinking or what they really believe, where if you're denying something but you're nodding your head.
Right.
Didn't you talk about A-Rod or somebody like that who was involved in steroids and he was on like 20 or 60 minutes and
someone broke down their micro expressions?
Yeah, and found clearly that he was nodding his head when he said yes or
yeah.
something like that at one point. So,
humans are so dumb.
Yeah. While you're doing that, normally our body language matches up to our thoughts because they're accurate and true.
And instinctual.
Right. And when we're lying, not only do we have to think about the words we're saying and fabricate this alternate reality that doesn't yeah. really exist except in our heads, we also have to come up with the body language that's supposed to match us being calm, us being truthful, whatever. And so all of this thinky-thinky can be confusing to a liar.
Yeah.
And if you stretch it out over the course of enough time,
yeah.
a line of questioning, they're probably going to be like, why are you interrogating me or whatever? And you've broken them. And at that point, you just drive the hammer home and literally beat them to death with a hammer.
No, you don't.
That's the inevitable conclusion of any line of questioning, right?
No. What you could do, though, is pause, because a pause in a conversation might make just a regular conversation feel uncomfortable. You talk about the awkward pause.
Yeah.
But, man, if someone's cooking up a lie and you're asking them questions and you pause, and this is a big time tactic by an attorney with someone on the stand,
yeah.
that will seem like an eternity to those people.
Yeah. They may get fidgety or whatever. They'll turn into like Miranda July on that videotape and You, Me, and Everyone We Know, where she's like, I can do anything right now. Did you see that?
I did. I enjoyed that movie.
You know what I'm talking
uh-huh.
about?
I know exactly what you're talking about.
So if somebody does that in the middle of a pause
uh-huh.
during a line of questioning,
yeah.
they're lying.
And finally,
or they're adorable and artsy.
Right. And are into mumblecore. And then we talked about the last one. Step five is change the subject and see if you see them visibly relax and then go, aha!
Yeah, where they're like,
whew. Yeah, and they're like, oh, wait, no, I wasn't relaxing.
Right.
I'm on meth.
Aha. Yeah, that's a good way to catch somebody off guard. Or you could do the Columbo method. Let them off the hook. Let them calm down. And then turn around and be like, one more question.
Oh, is that what he would do?
Oh, yeah, every time. That's how we would catch somebody. And that would be like they didn't have an answer for that, and it totally caught him off guard, and then he'd beat him to death with a hammer at the end of every episode.
Robert Blake, right? Isn't that Columbo?
Peter Falk.
I always get those guys confused.
Robert Blake really did go to jail for murder.
Yeah, that's because he really killed his wife.
He was Beretta.
That's right. I always get those confused. But not with the Rockford Files.
Oh, no. That's Jim...
Jimmy Garner.
Yeah, he's great.
All right, so I didn't look at any of the famous lies in history.
They were pretty much whatever.
Standard. So we talked about the kids' study. I found an interesting link from the University of Southern California.
Uh-huh.
Where they found what they believe is proof that the brain structure of a pathological liar is different. They're actually wired differently than the rest of us.
Oh, yeah. I could totally see that because the brain is subject to plasticity.
Yeah.
So structurally, it's different, right?
Well, that's what they say. They took subjects, 108 volunteers, and then interviewed them with psychological tests and placed them in different categories of, like, are you a repeated liar? Are you antisocial? and a pathological liar, or are you normal?
Okay.
I guess a normal liar. And then they hooked him up to the old MRI, the Wonder Machine, and they found that liars had significantly more white matter and less gray matter, which they believe equates to liars are...
quicker thinkers?
Basically, yeah.
White matter is the stuff that transmits the electrical impulses.
They're
right?
more equipped to lie physically.
They
their brains
think
are more
on
equipped.
Their feet.
Yeah.
I'm like one big continuous lump of gray matter.
Oh yeah.
I don't think I have any white matter whatsoever. There's like there's a donkey on like a ferry that goes across the mighty Mississippi. That's my neural transmission.
With Huck Finn.
Yeah. But Huck Finn is like really fat. And kind of dumb. There they go right now. I can
Chuck
feel
Finn.
It. Yeah.
And then this other thing, we've touched on the thinking cap.
Transcranial magnetic stimulation.
Yeah. And what was that again?
TMS. Oh, it was the thinking cap. We did an episode on this too, where there's a, I guess it uses magnets?
Magnetic pulses. That can target very specific parts of the brain without
By
targeting others.
Laying a magnet that can pulse right over a specific part of your brain and going boom, boom. And then high frequency stuff makes you like, you twitch and stuff like that. Low frequency can like give you a stutter depending on the region of the brain. It's basically just messing with your brain.
Right.
And the neural firings.
And it can make you more creative too. Wasn't that one of them?
Yeah, that's what they found. More creative and, people could pick out like prime numbers out of a huge block of numbers where they couldn't do that
right,
before.
That's right.
Or they could draw a horse really well all of a sudden.
So apparently if these volunteers were hooked up to the TMS thinking cap machine, let's call it, and volunteered to have their dorsolateral prefrontal cortex stimulated, which is complex thought and deception, decision making. And they found, and it has two sides, like every other part of the brain.
Okay.
And they found that people who had the left side stimulated lied more often, and people on the right side were more likely to tell the truth. And they asked them like obvious questions, like what color is this piece of paper? Like lie to me or don't lie to me. And, basically it's early in the going here. I think this is from 2011, but they think this could lead to possibly one day, instead of people taking a lie detector test, taking a lie prevention test, like hooking them up and basically you cannot lie to me while you're getting pulsed like this.
That is crazy.
So did you kill your wife?
That is very crazy. Did I? Oh.
No, I wasn't asking you. Although I haven't seen you in a while. She okay?
Is just fine. I saw her this morning.
Good.
I'll have her send you an email.
Sure. Well, actually, it's funny you brought that up. Because this last little study found that email, people are only likely to lie in email 14% of the time.
Yeah.
Compared to 37% on the phone, 27% in person, and 20% via text. And I found that interesting.
I find it interesting, too. The phone makes sense because it's verbal communication, so you're more frightened.
Sure.
There's more intimidation. Which I think probably is one of the things that leads to lying among people more frequently than anything else, being intimidated.
Right. You're not face-to-face, which probably helps.
Exactly. Yeah. So the phone is the most lie-laden form of communication, right?
Yeah.
But email is the least lie-laden, and I think it's because you don't have to vocally express it.
Sure.
Plus, the internet makes us all very brassy.
Well, plus email, too, also... There's like documented evidence, a paper trail or an electric paper trail.
Electronic. That's a good point too.
Like I wouldn't lie in an email because then somebody could take that email later on and bust me on it.
That's true.
I would only do that 14% of the time, evidently.
Right. Well, I record all of yours in my conversations, so I've got it all documented.
Good.
All of it.
Oh, bad.
I guess that's it.
That's all I got.
That was a lot. That was a lot on lying. We covered the philosophical aspects. You mentioned the brain. We poo-pooed psychology. We talked about the big five, the big six, the other big five. We covered everything in here.
Yeah, and let us finish by saying to kids out there, although it may seem like a good idea at the time, It is not a good idea in the long run, and your lie may just make things worse. In fact, it'll very much likely make things much worse on you.
Yeah, agreed.
To tell the truth.
Agreed.
It's a good habit to get into as you grow.
Oh, yeah. Those are the people who really kind of become the best.
Agreed.
Later on. Not necessarily the richest.
No.
Although that's not the... Richard Branson never told a lie in his life, probably.
But there are riches beyond the dollar.
Exactly. That's what I'm driving at.
And being honest as well.
And the true trust of another person, it
Dude,
doesn't get much
that.
Wealthier than that.
Agreed.
If you want to learn more about lying, you can look it up by typing L-Y-I-N-G in the search bar at howstuffworks.com. I said search bar in there, no lie, which means it's time for listener mail.
Whoa, Nelly.
Whoa.
We got a couple of quick announcements to make before listener mail. The first is we have, if you've listened to our Halloween episodes the past 2 years, we do readings that are royalty-free because they're old.
Right.
And they're good, from Poe and Lovecraft and the like.
Yeah.
This year, we want to read one of your horror stories.
Absolutely true. And we're going to do that through this long, complicated process by which starting a little while ago, June 18th,
yeah,
and running until July 20th, you can submit your own horror fiction.
Yeah,
that's
sure.
not been published anywhere else, mm-hmm. and that is between 3,000 and 4,000 words.
That's right.
You can send it in an email to howstuffworks_contests@discovery.com, right?
Yeah. And do yourself a favor. Go read the rules because you don't want to take the time to do this and then be disqualified.
No. There's a blog post on the blogs at How Stuff Works, and it's titled something like Stuff You Should Know's Horror Fiction Contest, Get Your Official Rules Here.
Something like that.
And it's got all the rules. It has like a pithy introduction to the rules that we came up with. And then, so the key here, though, is no matter what, you have to, in the email, write the words, by entering into the contest, I agree to abide by the contest rules.
Right.
Any email that has a submission that doesn't have those words in it is automatically disqualified.
Yeah, and we don't want that because if you've worked on this, you know, we want you to be able to win.
Yeah. It's only open to residents of the U.S., 18 or older, 18 as of June 18th.
That's right.
But anyway, you send them to us. We're going to read all of them. We're going to judge them. And then we're going to pick the top 16, enter them into a bracket, and it's going to be like the Thunderdome until everybody votes on their favorite. And that yeah. favorite one is the one we'll read for our Halloween episode.
Pretty cool. Great idea. Josh's idea. I think he's already regretting having thought of it. Because of how complicated contests are.
They really, really are.
Yeah.
But I don't regret it. No, I'm very anxious and looking forward to it. So, Comic-Con, too.
What?
Yeah, we're going to be at Comic-Con in San Diego.
You're going to Comic-Con?
You are too, pal.
Oh, that's right.
I know.
I booked my ticket.
Oh, you booked your own? I had people book mine for me.
Well.
Let's see. We're going to be at Comic-Con on Thursday, July 12th. And we're going to do a live podcast at a panel, right?
Yeah, right there at the convention center. We do not know what time exactly, but we'll announce that on Facebook and the like and Twitter.
And there's supposed to be possibly a special guest, maybe. There's going to be trapezes,
yeah.
monkeys, circus peanuts, the whole thing.
Yeah, we can't announce the guests yet because we haven't locked it down, but hopefully they are on the fringe of society.
All right, so Comic-Con Horror Fiction Contest, it's time now for listener mail.
Josh, I'm going to call this SYSK, Teaching America's Utes.
Okay.
Hi, guys, and Jerry. I've written before you even mentioned my podcast, Our List, on your show once. Remember, we were the doppelgangers because we sent you T-shirts that you originally thought were you.
Sure.
And it was us. I remember those guys. Anyway, I wanted to write and thank you. Besides being a podcaster, I'm a teacher. My fourth graders were going to be dissecting earthworms and help prepare them for their first ever dissection. I gave them a homework assignment of listening to the Earthworm podcast. Great idea.
Yeah.
Many had never listened to a podcast before, and I was wondering how they would react, and the overall response was great.
Except for the three that ended up with seizures for some weird reason.
They found it funny that you discussed species pronunciation, which... turns out I was wrong. Remember I said, can't say species?
Yeah.
Apparently you can say either.
No, I said species. You said it's species or species. Or species or species. And I said, no, it's just species. So you were wrong in that. Just wanted to make sure. I don't really remember, but that's how it went down.
They found the facts that you shared amazing. I gave them a questionnaire to fill out, and Mr. Zach misspelled the word questionnaire.
Zach.
As they listened, and almost everyone completed their homework, which is no small feat. So thank you for giving me another way to reinforce my lessons. You may have some new fans in exchange, and that is Mr. Zach at East Cooper Montessori Charter in Mount Pleasant, South Carolina. Go
Coops.
Catamount Coops.
Go Barrel Makers.
Yes.
Isn't that what Coopers do?
Oh, is that a Cooper?
Mm-hmm.
Sure.
I think so. Man, I hope it is. God, I hope it is. Thanks, Zach. It was good to hear from you guys again. Where can they find their podcast, Chuck?
It's called Our List.
On iTunes, probably?
Yeah, sure.
Okay.
Easy old Google.
Cool. If we have helped shape children's lives, man, we are crazy for that.
Oh, yeah.
We always love hearing about that kind of stuff. So we want to hear it. Send it to us. You can tweet to us at SYSK Podcast. You can join us on Facebook at Stuff You Should Know, facebook.com/StuffYouShouldKnow. And you can send us an email at StuffPodcast@discovery.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit HowStuffWorks.com.